sing it, sister. Make your fridges, grab 10 other fridges and turn up and watch these games.
Welcome to Giants Women Say, the podcast where we discuss all things GWS Giants. I'm Fiona Lamb.
I'm Tracy Kick.
I'm Emma Phillips.
And I'm Nat Morgan.
In episode 7, we will review the GWS versus D's game from the weekend. We will discuss the week that was. We'll have an interview from Ingrid Nielsen. We'll preview the Giants versus Crows game. And we'll have predictions for round 6. So let's get into it.
What about Corrections Corner? Because it's not about me this time.
Oh, yeah, so
don't forget Corrections Corner.
And we will have Corrections Corner. Someone has an apology to make and I can't wait. Let's talk about the weekend, shall we? Who wants to start?
Oh, I'll start. Where do you start? I guess early it looked promising. GWS were promising early.
Yep, at the end of the quarter it was 8-8, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I was also, the D's kicked poorly and missed quite a few opportunities. So I guess on balance it wasn't as even as it might have looked on the scoreboard, but it gave them every opportunity. But I think for me, I don't know, I just think, look, they won the contested, the uncontested possessions. I don't feel like there was a connection in the team. I felt like that there were too many individual efforts and, just lack continuity or something. I don't know what everybody else thought, but, I was disappointed. And the Ds, to their credit, they won more of the ball and they, were going forward. And even though they kicked inaccurately early, they were able to capitalise that in the end. So,
Yeah, they still picked up, corrected their mistakes, kept going and eventually turned it into something good, as in a goal.
Mm-hmm. Eva and Parker probably had the most stats of anyone on the field, but they were the only two. There was a big then drop to any other GWS player, whereas I guess the Melbourne players consistently across the board all had contributors. You talked about the inaccuracy at the beginning. Cunningham marking, grabbing. She was my concern last week when we talked about who was going to pick her up. Mm. She first quarter missed her first couple of shots but ended up with 3 goals, whereas Bernardi missed her first couple of shots and got one and then missed another one. She didn't fire again. We didn't have anyone turning their game around or making their errors into positives or anything like that. That was our biggest problem, I think. And anyone who made an effort didn't make an effort for long enough, I don't think.
So who did get our goals?
There's only two of them. Bernardi got one and Barclay got one in the third quarter, I think, wasn't it? Yeah, and she had some great little minutes. Not enough dedication to get the ball. She has these little spurts. There was quite a few plays. Cora got the ball and then she doesn't give it off. She ducks one way, then the other.
Keep that footy, doesn't she?
Oh, yeah. It was frustrating. Just get it off when you're free and then the forwards are leading to where you're going and then she turns back inwards and then so they all have to turn as well. Reminds me of Alison Dingwell. I used to play in the Sydney Comp. Ding. She'd do the same thing. As a forward, she'd get the ball.
Shout out to Ding.
Not tag it. It used to kill us. If you get the ball and run one way, that's where your forwards are leading to that wing or wherever you're heading. And then she would duck back into play every time.
It was so frustrating.
She did that over and over. I know she wants the ball and wants to do stuff with it, but it wasn't coming off yesterday or Saturday.
The footy wasn't direct enough. There's so many handballs and the stats say, handballs can be a positive stat. So I guess it depends what you're doing at the time, right? But the Giants out-handballed Melbourne. But to the point of what, because I felt like, same thing, mucking around with the ball when we just needed to go direct. And I think if we'd gone direct earlier, then we're inside 50 quicker and we can capitalise on what's happening. So, Fee, you were at the game. So, what did you see?
I tell you what I saw. I saw Gummo get crunched in that collision.
Yeah, with Shelley Scott.
It looked good on TV as well.
I saw it with my own eyes.
Eyes.
It's very, very. It was really disturbing because Gummo was actually crawling on the ground for a couple of seconds. It was just awful to watch. I'm surprised she played another minute in that game, but she did. She came off and then went back on. So did
Shelley Scott.
Shelley Scott.
Same one as before. But you're right. It took the wind out of both of them. There was nothing illegal or dangerous in the tackle. They just both had eyes. And so credit to them both. They wanted the ball. aimed at it. And I assume they both just got seriously winded and the yep. sort of whole spine out of place. So yep. I think we were saying that maybe that she could do her own manipulation on her back afterwards as a physio.
She could give herself her own physio expertise. It was certainly needed after that. But she, Gummo had some good moments. Haneen had some good moments. There were good moments here and there, but they didn't translate into what we needed.
Cora had some good moments too. Interestingly, the Giants have named her as best on for them.
Yeah, and I think that's interesting. She did have a lot of possessions, but I still believe, as you've pointed out, that she needs to give that first give because it's too confusing. If you try and take the game on too much, then, you know, she got caught two or three times, I think, and you know, it just messes up that connection. And I think that's part of the issue. You know, interestingly, the Giants didn't win the hitouts but won the clearances again. So obviously we had Erin out with a broken thumb or fractured thumb. I'm not sure what the prognosis for that is. And Ingrid came in. I don't believe that Ing wins as many hitouts as Erin, but for some reason both games she's played we've won the clearances and we hadn't been winning the clearances even though we'd been winning the hitouts. So
because Ingrid has that second effort, so she's like an extra midfielder who then is down looking for the ball and wins her own hitout. Perhaps that's it. She seems to really make that conscious effort to try again.
Mm-hmm. Well, there were two stats that really jumped out for me just to follow on from what you were saying, Tracy, particularly about the clearances. So the Giants actually doubled the Ds in the centre clearances. Their stoppage clearances were 16 to 10. So, you know, they're getting the ball. The midfielders are doing their job, getting the ball. Obviously, it's falling down around the forward line or, as you said, not direct enough with the kicks. Perhaps the forwards aren't performing as they should be. But there's plenty of footy, winning of the footy around those contests, even without those hitouts coming through.
Yeah,
the other one that I find interesting is the freeze count. So Giants 12, Ds 22 freeze. And that, I mean, you know, you can read a whole lot of things into that, I suppose. But I wonder if, in their frustration, the Giants are getting a bit reckless with their tackling or...
Mm. And I think, you know, the tackling pressure was something that both teams were asked to work on. So I agree. I think that, you know, sort of just the physicality, they've upped the physicality, but it's detrimental if it's not, you know, if it means giving away frees, then it's really not helping. So, yeah,
well,
that's
I do have to mention again that there were some very questionable calls. And the crowd was getting pretty upset about some of those. Mm. Oh, don't give me that look, Tracy Kim. Don't give me that look.
The losing team always blames the umpires, don't they?
When they're wrong.
Mm. Yes. Honestly, as a coach, I can't ever consider the umpires because everybody has those umpires.
Yes.
So whether their decision makings are warped or maybe the Giants are frustrating, getting mouthy, and then that turns, you know, that ends up being, you know, something that the umpires get frustrated with themselves and they get a bit of unconscious bias because they're kind of going, well, that person's not giving me hell.
Lip.
I mean, I think that umpires... I just don't – it's not a controllable factor in the game as a player or a coach. And it's interesting because I picked up on Bec Goddard or Alex, actually picked up on Gummo calling for a holding the ball. This is one of my hates as a coach, calling for the holding the ball with the arm signals and all during a contested thing. The whistle hadn't gone yet. Now, if you were doing that, your head's not in the game. You're not doing what you should be doing, which is finding that next most dangerous player or making yourself available. If you're umpiring, you're not playing.
Right.
And so I take your point. I do think that does seem like quite an unbalanced number of frees, but without knowing what exactly was going on, I don't think you can judge it. And I really like the umpires are umpiring the game and they're not something that you can control as a player, whereas how you respond to the umpires you can control, how you react to the contested situation you can control. They're controllables, and I don't think that the Giants are in the headspace to control the controllables, and you know, they just seem to be trying to, you know, sort of so focused on winning that they're not just playing footy.
So you're saying be the change you want to see.
Maybe.
Well, I think we need to talk about 50s. There were a lot of 50-metre penalties given away and I didn't understand what was going on. So I'm assuming either they were mouthy or they were running over the mark.
I'd say they'd be in the protected area, but that rule is got to be – that is, it's just ridiculous.
It's a contentious rule.
It even turned into a double 50 in one of the games on the Sunday as well.
The North game, North Adelaide game.
Yeah, do you know they said that was the first double 50, but that's not the first double 50 I've seen.
I thought there was one against us.
Yeah, there's been others.
But was it the first double in terms of that new just running ahead without, you know, where that player can't get back on the mark and things like that, and then there's a stop, that type thing?
I don't know. It kind of seems like the rule is not clear for people. And then there was that whole incident where in the Carlton-Collingwood match where, you know, they're claiming that one coach was told that there was a slight amendment to the rule and the other saying, I don't know anything about it. And then they're just saying, no, we were just clarifying the rule in the pre-game chat. But it's a rule that needs to be looked at. And, you know, I've got to wonder whether or not it will be implemented in local football at the VFLW or in Sydney AFL. And if it is, it really needs to be clarified because people are not clear. I'm not clear. Yeah. And I feel like I know the game. So imagine people who don't know the game.
Well, that was the reason Collingwood lost that match, obviously.
Yes, Nat.
We need to hang our hat on something.
Very
control
sad
the controllables.
Do we want to say any more about the Giants game, or shall we get on to other games?
Is there a positive to draw from it? A couple of positives?
No,
nothing.
So that's so funny. I wasn't going there.
Nothing.
No. Well, the only positive I can say is a couple of things. I think that they did go inside 50 nearly as many times as the D's, but didn't capitalise. And secondly, if there is a positive, it's that they're in a pool where the leading team only has two wins. So anything's possible from here that requires a bit of winning and some other teams losing. But I guess they're still in the race, where I'd say Collingwood are absolutely not in the race.
Well, GWS next week have got Adelaide and then the Cats. So they would have to win both.
They'd have to win both, and other people need to lose. Brisbane play Geelong. So one of them is going to be a game up. I think it's very slim. But, I mean, you know, there's a lot to play for, I guess. I mean, there's the pride and there's the preparation for, you know, what might be the next season or the VFLW. So I don't know. I don't know what they take from it. I wonder if they'll come home like a train because the pressure might be off.
Yeah.
Do you imagine Maddie Collier will come back in this week?
The contribution in that forward line is interesting. So I think they brought in Britt Perry, I think two touches. Sindat played well and had a lot. The two Irish women had a lot, but nobody else in the forward line had more than a handful of touches. And so I think they're still struggling. And we were talking before about the weaponry of someone like Adelaide. You know, you man up a couple of key players and then you've still got these like dynamic people. But for whatever reason, we're not scoring from the other forwards. And if you've not got a forward line that you can kick goals from multiple players, and you're relying on Von Bonner or Cora or Cinder, which seems to be what the situation
we were
is.
And
Bernardi, who at least has come to life in the last two games, I think.
I have to say, I was being very critical of her again, going for a goal from the 50, but it was only when she made a lead for Cora going from the 50 and Cora didn't take that opportunity, it occurred to me that no one was there for her to kick to. So it's all very well for me to say, oh, I've seen you not make a goal from that distance, but if there's no one for her to kick to, what's she going to do?
So you feel like maybe she's sort of just popping it up into the square hoping someone will take it?
Because there's no one to kick to.
I feel like they've just been rotating two or three players through the forward line hoping for a spark, you know, but it's not coming. I expected that there would be more because they've got six midfielders, let's say, that there'd be more midfield through the half forward or the forward line. And I think that's happened to a degree. It hasn't really been that evident to me. But, you know, what about putting, you know, there was talk that Gummo might go down into full forward, for example, for a rest. You know, I mean, Ng played again. You know, try her down at full forward for a rest. I think they've got to try something different because the forward line connection just isn't there for me.
Who was our previous ruck before Ingrid came in? Sorry.
Erin McKinnon?
Yeah. So what happened to Erin McKinnon?
Broken thumb.
During the game, was that?
No. You weren't paying attention, were you?
It was my 13th beer or something like that. No, I'm sure that wasn't true.
Prior to the game, it was
I just said it before, Nat.
Sorry. I wasn't
in the program.
Okay.
I'll say
just delete that, or do I make this week's correction corner straight in? Sorry, Trace, I wasn't listening earlier.
I've been making mention of our listeners, and some of them are in Ireland, but apparently one of them isn't in the room.
No, I'm travelling.
I'm travelling.
Just delete that.
So I don't know how long Erin McKinnon will be out for, but I don't know. What would you do? I mean, I think now you just throw caution to the wind, don't you? I mean, there's three players having a game at all. Will they play them? I guess that's the question. Last year there were four players didn't play at all during the season. So, you know, do they get the call up and see what they can do so that you can evaluate how you go forward into the next year? Or do you, you know, stick to your tried and true? But to me, yeah, I just haven't seen a lineup that – to me is convincing that this is the A team.
But so is it the choice of players, or is it that they are the right choice of players who are not playing well?
Hard to say.
Or structures, or you know, are they following structures? Is the ball coming in loose because the midfielders are under too much pressure? Maybe they're getting the clearances but they're scrappy kicks.
My name is Anine Zareka and you are listening to Giants Women Say.
I'm a Giants fan, but a little query on the culture perhaps down there at the moment. Certainly the Giants are a quality outfit. You know, they're a really good team on paper. We know what they're capable of. That midfield is stellar, but something's not looking right. Is it the connection between the players not going so well? You know, maybe it's just it's lost its fun. For the players, things perhaps are too serious. I guess the question I would have, you know, as superstar coach as well, are the expectations too high? Are things too heated and serious at the Giants at the moment?
Yeah.
Don't know. I wonder. I don't know whether the initial pressure came from outside. At the start of the season and early in the season, it's all about GWS. We're going to make the finals, or they're going to be premiers, or at least playing off for it. And I'm not sure where that came from or why it came about either. So that puts a lot of pressure on them from outside with expectations of the public. And if Alan or the coaching staff are saying the same thing, it's coming from all points. They just missed out on the grand final last year, wasn't it?
So a win against Brisbane in the last round would have put them in the grand final.
Okay. So
unfortunately, they were massacred.
Yeah. So yeah. Maybe that was a sign that they weren't ready for that next step as well.
I think that was a sign of the same thing that Em's alluding to, which is the pressure in a 7 or 8 week season to win week in and week out. You know, I mean, only your strongest culture is going to survive that, because, you know, it doesn't matter how good you are. That it's a really hard call. I think it's an impossible situation for the players and for the coaches and for the support staff. It's very demanding. It's nothing akin to what the men go through.
Because it's do or die every week.
It is. It's like a grand final every week.
Every minute, you know, every second, every tackle is watched and counted. There's less time to play yourself into
literally
a game.
Fewer minutes.
It's hotter. We always talk about the heat, but, you know, there's so much pressure and intensity. I mean, I've singled out the Giants in terms of connection between players and pressure. And of course, every team is under this immense pressure every week. What's different at the Giants? I don't know. Hard to say. I suppose the counterpoint for me is watching reasonably closely what's going on at North Melbourne at the moment. There's a lot of talk about how happy the players are there. It's the number one thing coming out of their mouths directly. Mm. And they'll say, I just love it here. I'm enjoying my footy. I'm enjoying this club. It's like nothing I've experienced before. And I know that North Melbourne Football Club went out of its way to make those players feel very welcome. They built an extension in their club rooms to you know, give the women a proper space there and all sorts of things that were sort of laid out. I don't know enough really to make a full comparison with the Giants, but questions are there.
Really, we all thought last week when they had the win, we said they appeared to be communicating properly and the handballs were hitting targets, but it was for just that first quarter and they had the wind as well. So maybe we talked up that win a bit too much.
Yep.
But they just weren't good enough. Maddie Gay on Sunday afternoon, I mean, she was terrific. She couldn't be stopped, and between her and then Cunningham getting it, it was just GWS didn't look like they were even going to touch the ball a couple of times, or there were just no clear passages of play, was there? Or if they'd put their teammate under pressure with handballs and things like that. Mm. So communication isn't right, so maybe the culture's not right. And
I suppose it brings out the broader question too about in this pressure cooker situation for all the teams and all the girls playing, how do they look after the mental health of players. And perhaps you know a bit more about this, Trace, than I do. And there certainly are player welfare staff involved, I know that. But, you know, is there additional support needed in this kind of environment? I wonder about them season after season going through something like this.
I think, well, in terms of the cap, 5% of the cap has got to be spent on welfare. It doesn't sound like much, but that's $20,000. That's above and beyond, I think, psychology. So most clubs have a welfare person and a psychologist. To be honest, you know, look, there's so little time when by the time you're out and you're reviewing games and you're training, you're rehabbing and you're whatever, to be honest, you know, you get a lot of one-on-one time for those who particularly probably need it with the sports psych, but you don't get a lot of group time. And this goes back to sort of our discussion, Em, about culture and, you know, culture beating strategy, but the effort, you know, there just isn't the time. It's not actually where the effort's spent. There's just not time in a week of a part-time athlete to get people in a room to build the kind of culture. I remember, you know, Swanee saying in 2018, she said, "Oh, trust, excellent, that's really important. How can we get that fast?"
Yeah.
Was she joking?
No.
Oh,
She wanted to get it fast. Yeah. You can't build trust fast. Trust is not something you build by just, you know, I don't know, it's not... It's something that comes over
falling
time.
Backwards off a table and being caught. Yeah,
trust
by
games.
Your
But I think, you know, it's about, you know, she meant it. She wanted it to get it fast because she knew how important it was. But the thing is that you don't have the time. The preseason's so short. The amount of hours you get with players is short. You know, things have got to be compromised. And at the end of the day, that's the stuff that's compromised. And I think that's the stuff that, you know, and in this type of season is so important.
I mean, they call themselves the Misfits in the Dad's Army, which I think is self-deprecating and unhelpful. But when you put it in those terms and really examine the fact that players are coming from interstate and they haven't played many seasons together in their local club football, it's just not possible.
I'm gonna get all kind of theoretical here, but there's a woman called Carolyn Taylor who specialises in organisational culture, and she says you have to be who you need to be in order to do what you need to do. And really what it's about the mindset that you need to have in order to achieve your goal. So it's about being who you need to be. So those values and that culture stuff, if that's not agreed and strong, then you can't do what you need to do, and especially in a team sport.
Thinking about part-time work too, you know, is there a greater onus on individual players to self-care, and are they doing that outside of the hours that the football club has allocated to them or they're paying them for? I can imagine these players, again, this pressure cooker situation, you know, it's hard work. It's like so much part-time work that's hard. You take it outside of those hours, you're not being paid for it. You know, I wonder, are they spending the rest of the week in managing themselves, their mental health?
Look at Fridge's interview. I mean, Fridge talked about balancing a full-time job, saying it was almost near impossible now because each year the demands are increasing but the hours are not really increasing. So we're getting an increase in what's expected of you both at the club and in your own time, which you're not compensated for. But you just actually, it comes down to the number of hours you have in a day by the time you have family responsibilities and, you know, it's humanly hard.
Yeah, it was really telling when she said you need to be with someone who will let you get away with a lot. I just thought, oh, God, the pressure on a relationship, let alone on the players.
Yeah.
You're not being the person you need to be in the relationship you want to be. You're not being the person you need to be a parent to your child, to be, you know, in the lives of the wider circles around you, because you're being the person you need to be a player.
Yeah, and I mean, I can attest, I mean, I had no time to do anything outside of footy and work when I was there last year. I was working probably 58 hours a week, but about 25 at the club and the rest at work. It's absolutely grueling, and by this time, by the end, I was broken. So I imagine the players are too.
Okay,
let's move on to some more positive.
I'm Ellie Brash and you're listening to Giants Women Say.
I want to give a great shout out to the Giants players who put out a Mardi Gras message earlier in the week.
So there was Pepper Randall, there was Jacinda Barclay, there was Jess Dalpos, and there was Ellie Brush, and there were a couple of male players, and I don't actually know who they are, but that's okay because this is Giants Women Say, and I want to send a lot of love to those players in our AFLW team because that meant a great deal to not just the people in Sydney who were attending the Mardi Gras, people around Australia, and it got a lot of love on social media. A lot of people were saying just how well the social media is going for the Giants. So great message, gals, and all the best to you. They also wore rainbow
laces
for the game that was on Sunday, which was the day after Mardi Gras, and I am still pushing for a bye round for that Mardi Gras weekend because there was Megan Shoot in Melbourne saying
Australian cricketer,
wishing she could be in the Mardi Gras, but and I said that it should be a bye round, and I got a like on Twitter, so she's on board too.
And actually, kudos to your Tibetan flag. I saw it, and it's bigger than you talked it up. You said, I've got a little flag on the back of my bike. It was like, you know, those helicopters that fly over Westfield. It was like that flapping off the back of your bike, so congratulations. I did see it.
Why you thought that people wouldn't be able to see it.
Well, this is Phoebe Monaghan and you're listening to Giants Women Say.
So let's talk about a couple of the other games.
Adelaide-North Melbourne game.
Yeah, now, let's talk about that.
Top two sides, they started so well together.
Can we call it the bull bar round?
The bull bar. We did talk about the Kangaroos getting slammed by someone's bull bar. And I do believe if you go back to the tape, instead of making an error, I actually nailed it. I said that Adelaide would smash them. Now, I know it took till about three-quarter time for that to happen, but it was about a five-goal blowout in the end.
Yep.
Adelaide looked terrific. It was almost just like they were waiting to put the foot down in the end. It was just teasing North Melbourne along, I thought. I thought it was probably the battle of the floating defenders between Duffin at one end and Chelsea Randall at the other. And I know often they don't have a player who marks up on them and they're just in and out, basically floating through. But they read the play, they put their body on the line, and they're taking the marks. They're amazing, aren't they? It was great to watch them do their thing.
It's great, Nat, to hear you talk about the defenders straight up in a game. We never, first off, say, how great is it that we had two superb defenders playing? We go, well, let's look at the midfielder stats or whoever kicked how many goals, but a couple of defenders. Yay, the defenders, I say.
Well, I started my career as fullback, and the main reason was because when the very first week the team was announced, or on the ground of day one at Wagner Oval, they said, oh, the coach isn't here. Who wants to go on the field? And I just thought, I so don't want to be on the bench. And they started, who wants to be fullback? And it was all quiet. And I said, yeah, I'll go fullback. And that's where I spent my first year. So, kudos to the defenders indeed.
Mm. I think the best forwards start in defence, Nat, because you learn what it is that you're trying to evade.
Yeah, true.
So true. All forwards should go through the back line, as I did one time last year when we were winning by quite a bit in club footy. I made all the forwards go back. I remember that very clearly. Anyway, Em, you were at the game, putting on a bit of a guard of honour for the North Melbourne, a lot of Muggets players. Do you want to tell us a bit about that and the conditions of the ground, which I believe were quite hot?
Oh, 37 degrees, and it was, I think, the fourth day in a row of 37 in Melbourne, so probably kept the crowd down a little bit, you know, blustery conditions as well. Great game, it really was. Backtrack to the Melbourne Uni stuff. Good on North for engaging the Melbourne Uni girls, the old Mugger Brigade, who were a large part of helping to set up that North Melbourne team. So that partnership was established 9 years ago now. I thought it was less, but it was 9 years ago. And, we really were, I suppose, kind of soldiers on the ground for North in so many ways, running those girls' academies and engaging with some strategy and MOUs with them. It was quite an amazing feeling, really, to have those girls there. It was like, you know, big reunion and lots of big hugs and all that sort of stuff. So go the Roos for that. Adelaide, though, they just look untouchable at the moment. I know I keep saying this week in, week out, but their superstars just seem like bigger and better superstars than the other clubs have. Mm-hmm. They talked about the Carney Phillips, standoff, and I think they both sort of took their honours for their respective clubs. But the rest of the Adelaide team, it really looks good for them, I have to say.
Hmm.
One of my friends said he thought the Adelaide bodies looked bigger than the North girls, especially through the midfield area. Not everyone, of course, but mostly they just seemed bigger and more menacing.
Intimidating.
Yeah.
The three of Phillips and Marinoff and Harcher, we were saying that they've got out of the top four possession getters in the whole competition, three of the girls from Adelaide are in that top five.
And they've got the leading goal kicker as well.
So unbelievable effort. You can shut down one, you can't shut down three, can you? It's very hard for opposition teams to be able to stop them. They just don't know where to go to. If one's having a quiet day, there's plenty of others taking their place at the moment, whereas other clubs are relying on one person. Adelaide are all over it at the moment. As a team, they're gelling. Exactly what we're saying GWS wasn't doing. Adelaide are there for each other and they look fantastic.
I was reflecting on that today and I was thinking about, you know, Adelaide winning the premiership in the first year and, you know, and the lack of kind of Victorian stars really in that lineup. Yeah. I mean, I know there were a couple of WA stars came across early, but, you know, it's not a team made up of Victorian stars. There is definitely a handful there. But all kudos to them because I think, you know, to play a brand of footy that is not built on, you know, originally the people that you would have expected to come across from Victoria. And I know Erin Phillips is kind of an anomaly. I mean, she's just an elite athlete. So, you know, it's hard to match her, I think. But even last year when she was injured, you kind of started to wonder, well, you know, was it just that first year thing? But she's better than before, I think.
Yeah.
And Ebony Marinoff has matured, so she used to do a lot of running around, a lot of touches, not necessarily being effective, but she's much more effective and she's still got the highest tackle count in the competition, I believe. So, no, they just look amazing. I must say, Fee, I noted your comment on the commentary in relation to their offensive style of play, having a little go at potentially at their previous coach. But in all fairness, I think they have built on whatever it is that that they did well previously, and they are just looking unstoppable.
Yeah,
I'm going to say as a North fan, they're peaking too early.
And North had the loss they had to have. Is that right?
Exactly. Actually, it's funny you say that because a couple of the girls after the game were saying that the North Melbourne feeling in the rooms afterwards was better than when they had won against Melbourne the previous week. That one you thought they shouldn't have won, Fee,
yes.
Of course.
Yes.
And they obviously felt the same way because apparently the feeling in the rooms was pretty shabby after the Melbourne game. But Adelaide was actually quite up.
Right.
Relatively speaking.
Where you're going with that, is it?
Yeah.
Can we just touch on the other games quickly?
Can I say one more thing on that? Just that also had a quick chat with Emma Carney after the game, who has been carrying a knee injury. You might have noticed she was very heavily strapped up. And she said that she has a cartilage issue and they've been draining fluid from her knee on a relatively regular basis. They took out 30 mils, I think a few weeks ago, and she said 5 mils is enough to be uncomfortable. And the next round was 10 mils. So hopefully it's coming down, but that's just... says a lot for her, I suppose, mental capacity.
Yeah, it does.
It
also says a bit about the pressure the players are under because the stars of the game are being kind of held together by tape to stay in there. And I guess to some degree that's the same in the men's game, but I think to another degree because of the shortness of the season and that every game matters as a grand final. It's like getting, you know, you wouldn't have injections in your ankle for an average, you know, club round, but you might do it in the grand to get up for the grand final. But they're trying to get their best players up for every game.
You can't rest for two games, can you, ahead of finals? You just need every game as a win.
Yeah, you can. There's no option to go, oh, we'll give a couple of the youngsters a go and we're in a good spot or whatever. So that's not possible. Anyway, around the other games, the Lions and the Cats, I looked at this score. I didn't actually see the game, but I looked at the score.
Did you believe it when you saw it? I didn't.
Well, I believed it, but I found it very surprising.
Hmm.
It's the lowest, 8 points is the lowest score kicked in the AFLW history. Mm. And to come from the Lions, that was quite astonishing.
Yeah.
Especially after how they played just last week where we were raving about Kate McCartney having kicked, you know, I think 3 goals on the burst and they were looking terrific. They were ordinary. They had Sabrina was either limping or at least labouring around the field. McMack nailed the role on her. Wooshner didn't kick a goal and I think McCartney might have just squeezed one through early, I think it was. It must have been the only goal. They just looked pretty rough, didn't they? Mm. And Geelong were back to those early games where we all loving them.
Yeah, and they were without Asta and Maddie Boyd. So that was interesting. And that just goes to show sometimes you're forced to make a new decision, a new creative way of putting the team together. And sometimes that, you can be more powerful than the team that you think is the best player or the best group of players in the team. The Cats beat the Lions pretty much in, you know, most of the stats, other than hit outs and bounces. That might have been Kate McCarthy running and bouncing, was it?
Maybe that was the only time, yes. Collingwood Carlton.
That was interesting.
It was, actually. I had a moment of feeling sorry for Collingwood. It passed quickly.
No, I'm still feeling sorry for them.
I think Collingwood will probably be the first team in the threes of the comp to go through without a win. I'm pretty sure every team's won at least one game the other seasons. I can't see them winning. They're up against North Melbourne. Oh, Brisbane last round. We might be a chance. But, yeah, not looking good really at all. There was more posters. I think, did Taylor hit the post again or was it someone else?
Yeah, shot on goal. It was. So I think she had four posters in a row, didn't she?
She put on Twitter that she's starting a petition to get 9 points.
I agree. We're on that petition.
I said it's surely 20 is fair.
She would have won 3 games for them
good,
if that
good on
happened.
Her for finding a sense of humour
exactly.
about it.
Exactly. I think that's really good. Really good of her.
Darcy Vessio was up and about, probably her best game for the season. She looked a bit more motivated and a bit more excited about being out there. She seemed to want to sort of spark the teammates around her. I thought she was certainly a bit better. The new girl, Gutterall, I think it was, and Brazel, they did okay as well, but there was no one, no huge standouts for Collingwood, I didn't think. I sort of thought we were a chance. 5 points, wasn't it, in the end?
Mm.
So we were nearly there.
When it's less than a goal, I really did feel for Collingwood this week. And you can quote me.
And lastly, the Dockers and the Bulldogs. Very close match until the last kind of 15, 10 minutes.
Yeah. And then they were away. It was the result I wanted.
A little hesitation.
It was good to...
Because I know that you guys are sort of picking who you think will win and I pick who I want to win. I don't put a wager on anything. I'm just picking what I really want.
I think the telling stat there is inside 50s, 37 to 17. Mm. I mean, the fact that they hung in there for that long meant that... I think Freo came over them like a train. I don't know if the Freo Docker wind was blowing in Freo's advantage in the last quarter, but they definitely came home like a train.
They were anticipating it. I remember that they were anticipating the wind, but I don't know if it came after the game.
Well, it's super exciting to see Izzy Huntington get through that match too.
Yeah.
I mean, when
kicked
she
a goal, one?
Yeah.
She kicked a goal and her teammates swamped her, of course. So I just, every time I saw her, I held my breath.
Imagine what her parents are feeling.
They've been paying the bills.
That's it. Lachlan was back and Izzy
Brooke
was
Lachlan,
back.
Lachlan, exactly.
Look, neither of them, they weren't expecting them to be match winners either. So it was just good for them to get a run. Ellie Blackburn was back after the head knock, the last three head knocks really, and she did okay too. So you're looking at three players there who probably weren't at their best. And so out of only 16 players on the field, it's a lot who weren't in peak form, and maybe that's one of the differences at the very end. The last, I think it was Duffy who kicked a goal and goal assist in the last 6 minutes of the game.
She came alive in that last quarter,
she's been good, hasn't she, Duffy?
Mm. Mm. Yeah. I just want to shout out probably to Jess Trend, if it was an Achilles that she did it in the North Melbourne or playing for North Melbourne. She's had a tough sort of introduction to the AFLW, missing out on a couple of seasons with knees, and it's been a long time back. And first season playing back, and looks like she might have done her Achilles on the weekend.
North are saying ankle, but I don't know.
Listen, just really quickly around the tribunal. North Melbourne's Talia Randall is charged in tonight's tribunal, and we've got two others, so two incidents assessed, but I think these have not been charges. So that was contact between Shannon Campbell and Kate Darby, and contact between Bulldog Libby Birch and Docker Kelly Gibson, but it appears that the match review committee has let those ones through to the keeper. So it seems to be fewer incidents this weekend.
Yeah, interesting.
Everyone's behaved themselves this week.
And so, speaking of, let's do Corrections Corner.
Over to you, Emma.
Right.
What have you got to say for yourself, young lady?
It is on paper, it's a relatively small thing, but I was so boastful about stuff that I feel the need to eat some humble pie now, Fee, because you were having a crack at my beloved ruse and making it very clear that you were happy for them to be knocked off their perch. And I think I actually cut in halfway through your sentence because you'd said that they were playing at Chirnside Park. And I thought, no, they're definitely not playing at Chirnside Park. That's at the east of Melbourne. It's definitely not there. What the hell are you talking about? So I used that to say, well, you're wrong. Let me tell you something. And in fact, they were playing at Chirnside Park. It's in Werribee. It's not. There's another place in Melbourne called Chirnside Park in the east. That's correct, but there also was this other Chirnside Park where they played. And there was, in fact, eating it away. There was some serious confusion around where this game was being played because it's listed as Avalon Airport Oval. And then it's in Werribee, but it also was Chirnside Park. But a number of friends on Facebook just say, oh, no, I'm not coming to Avalon Airport. It's not happening. The air show is on. It's 37 degrees. We've got it down the highway. There's no way I'm going to Avalon Airport. I'm like, no. It's not at the airport. It's okay. Yeah, anyway, so it went. So I do apologise profusely.
See, right. That segment's as boring as last week's, really, wasn't it?
Did you just call my little speech boring?
Yeah. Well, it went on for about eight minutes last week. And now we've just gone through the Melways again. We're up to map 69, I think. So let's just call it quits. Let's not talk about where they're playing anymore.
I want to know what the attendance was at the under-13s netball.
Oh, well, actually, I've got them here. Hang on, Tick. Let me just flick through my notes.
The attendance at Avalon Oval was only 1,700, so that was
I thought there was about 4,000. They might have tweaked them a little bit, but 3,200. A lot of sausages were sold at that sausage chisel.
Hi, this is Erin McKinnon and you're listening to Giants Women Say.
You know what we haven't talked about? The two biggest issues of the round.
George
failing,
Pell?
Failing light towers, I was going to say.
Oh, gosh. Lights on, lights off. Lights
Sam
on.
Lane's call to have the medal at the end of the season named after Erin Phillips.
What? Well, I didn't even hear that.
I'm going to name my baby after her, not a trophy?
She said, serious question, should we do that? So
you can't name a medal after a
No. That's a unanimous no, isn't it?
No.
We don't like it.
Actually, the Balmain Dockers trophy was named the Nat Morgan trophy, and I missed out by one vote to Katie Walsh my last year. So it does happen, but it was awkward.
But you'd retired and you came back.
A bit odd, really.
True. I wanted to.
Yeah, she's inspired by that story.
That it's happened before, people retire and then come back and win their own trophy.
Look, Erin would be embarrassed too that they're talking that way.
But what a great opportunity to get the name on the trophy of someone who, was a sort of foundation pioneering woman in the game. It doesn't matter, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 50 years ago. Someone who isn't in the spotlight, someone who doesn't get that mass media attention. Let's talk about that work that was done before the glam.
To be fair. There's a lot of women who should be considered, and it should be a hats off to a pioneer in women's football at some point.
Hi, this is Yvonne Bonner and you're listening to Giants Women Say.
Let's talk about the light tower very briefly because I feel like we need to move on, otherwise Emma will be dropped.
In the men's game, they stop.
Emma's on thin ice right now.
Was it a football game or was it a cricket game where the men stopped playing because the light tower went out?
Well, they stopped at Drummond.
Well, two light towers went out and they nearly got struck by lightning.
The TV didn't look. It looked dark, but I thought it was okay playing conditions still.
They said it was dark in the pocket. That pocket was done. Yeah,
lights on, lights. It went on and off several times during play.
And it's not the first time it's happened there either.
No, Craig Starcevic has complained about that many a time, about the playing conditions of Icon, and it's due for an upgrade, but I don't know when that is.
Crumbs again, ladies, crumbs. We have to just accept the crumbs.
Yeah.
But I've got to say, in that Billie Jean King interview, and she says, give women crumbs and they celebrate.
That's right.
They got the whole cake.
Yep. I'm delighted today to be joined by Tassie-born, Sydney-dwelling, Giants ruckwoman Ingrid Nielsen. Now, I had the pleasure of playing alongside you, Ing, in the Sydney AFL League last season with the Bulldogs, and occasionally had to step into those Giants shoes when you, on the odd occasion, you needed a rest. and, you know, could never live up to your powerful engine. A lot of people talk about your powerful engine and an amazing ability to run all day in the ruck. I was astounded, and I'm super excited to see you being drafted by the Giants and now play a couple of games. How fantastic. Can we talk about first your first season, two games you've played? How's it been? What have you learned?
Thanks very much. First I've played two games with the Giants. First game was against Collingwood in Morwell, and then last weekend we played against Melbourne in Blacktown. I've learned a lot about myself and about the team as well. Obviously, it's my first year. Coming from club football, it's very different being in that elite environment and the expectations that holds. We train, you know, four times a week, you know, an hour or so on the pitch. Then we spend an hour or so in the gym. We have dietitians. We have, you know, strength and conditioning coaches. We have coaches for all different line groups. So I guess that's very different from club football, where there's generally only one coach. I think I've developed as a player from training sort of once a week or twice a week to the four times a week. I think my personal skills have increased. We also do a lot of analysis of our trainings and of the games as well. So you can sort of look back at drills and you can see sort of what you've done or where you've moved. That's also a different thing from club football, in that the coaches will look through that data and be like, you know, what are you doing there? Why have you decided to make that decision? Yeah, so that's been very different from club footy, in looking at the way you train. They're like, there's nowhere to hide when you play sort of in this elite environment of the Giants. Like there's, yeah, as I said, cameras everywhere. So you have to sort of be accountable for every decision that you make on the training field.
You got your first call up at short notice. Talk me through how you felt.
I was super excited to get the call up. I was just heading to training for the girls that didn't get selected on Saturday morning, and Alan called and said that Erin was unfortunately sick and to jump on the next plane. Obviously, it wasn't good that she was sick, but I was really excited to have the opportunity to play. Like, I'd been trained all the last few months, so to get the opportunity was, yeah, really exciting for me.
Now, you're a paramedic full-time, Ing. I know you were telling me earlier that you've just cut your hours back slightly in order to fit in your AFLW commitments. How have you dealt with the balance between working full-time as a paramedic and, I assume, on some shift work with the demands of AFLW?
It's been a little bit challenging. As I was saying before, the ambulance service has been really good, as it has allowed me to work sort of flexible hours instead of just the 2 days, two nights, which I normally work. So instead I've sort of been able to choose my shifts around the trainings that we have. In saying that, I guess it's still been difficult because I've had to go to training sort of after working night shift, and also go to work after going to training, like all afternoon. It has been hard, but I guess I just have to, it's just, you know, my ambulance job takes priority over AFLW, but I just got to try and fit both of them in the best that I can.
Has the club been okay with your ambulance commitments?
Yeah, the club's been really good. I haven't missed a lot of trainings, but the ones that I have missed, they've been, yeah, really understanding about that. So that's good.
With that, we often hear the word pressure used around AFLW. Intensity and pressure seem to be two words that come up pretty regularly. Thinking about those sort of part-time hours again, we discussed the idea that there might be a lot of additional need for well-being, like, you know, player well-being and looking after mental health. Do you think players are taking that on themselves, again, outside of those hours, to look after their mental health?
I think, yeah, everyone's responsible for their own mental health. Like, people can have people to talk to about their mental health, but overall I think it's people's personal responsibility. The Giants has a psychologist that you can talk to if you have any issues, so a lot of the players talk to him. But for me, I haven't had too many mental health problems. I've just sort of have ways to deal with stresses that help with my sort of stress with ambulance and with footy as well. So
Giants season generally. So 1-4 win-loss ratio, obviously not ideal. The Giants have looked good in patches, you know, got a good team on the park. What's going on, do you think?
Yeah, we're 1-4, which is not what we wanted to be at this part of the season. And I think coming into the season, we had a lot of expectations to do a bit better than we're doing at the moment. I obviously didn't play last year, but last year we had a better win-loss ratio than we do at the moment. I'm not really sure what's sort of going on. I think maybe, yeah, as you said, we have moments of being really good, but we just don't have that consistency across the four quarters. So I guess that's something that we have to try and implement into the game against Adelaide this weekend. They're obviously a really strong team. So I think we have the potential to be really good. We just have to try and play four quarters of quality football instead of just intermittently good, which we appear to be doing a little bit.
And what's the feeling amongst the playing group? How's morale at the moment?
Morale's good. Like, obviously coming off the loss to Melbourne is disappointing, and it sort of rules us out of finals contention, which is disappointing. But I think you just got to try and stay positive. Everyone's still trying their hardest. We're going to training this week, trying to improve on the things that we can improve on, and just try and, yeah, get a win this weekend or be competitive at least.
How much time do you guys get as kind of downtime, sort of socialising or letting your hair out sort of stuff during the season? Is there much of that?
Yeah, there's a little bit. I think it's just amongst ourselves to organise it. During pre-season we were training sort of four times a week on Saturdays and everything, but I think because lots of the girls aren't from Sydney, everyone tries to hang out when we don't have training or work, so we often either go out for dinner or go down to the beach or just try and do things to try and relax.
All right, Ing, now, are you ready for the Fast Five? This is much more intense and much more pressured than anything you'll experience in AFLW, of course. Five questions, rapid fire answers, okay? Don't think too much. Number one, favourite place for coffee?
Little Kitchen in Coogee.
Number two, how do you relax away from the field?
I like to go to the beach and go surfing and just relax in that way.
How often do you do that? Oh, I've thrown another question in there.
Pretty regularly, probably a few times a week. Try and go to Maroubra, go for a surf.
Number three, what music are you listening to now?
A mixture, but I've been listening to a bit of Ocean Alley, Middle Kids would be the main two at the moment.
All right, number four, favourite Sydney beach? You've probably answered that already.
Yeah, as I said before, probably Maroubra would be my favourite Sydney beach.
Number five, who has got the best sense of humour at the Giants?
Apart from myself, I think maybe Hixie. She's pretty funny. Just country girl, so she's pretty down to earth and pretty funny.
Any advice for the youngsters?
I guess just train hard and hopefully one day we'll see you out there.
Ingrid Nielsen, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Let's preview the Giants versus Crows game next week.
In Adelaide.
That was a collective sigh I heard then.
I plan to go.
You're fantastic, Fee. You plan to go. I don't plan to go. I'll be in Thailand. I plan to watch it using my Wi-Fi thing, if it works. look, this is going to be a hard ask.
It's almost going to be how big the margin, isn't it? It's going to be a huge blowout, surely.
Well, they've got a lot to play for, but Adelaide are just so good. And I mean, we spoke before about, you know, their stats and the depth of, you know, players who are in form in that win last week. I just can't see, even, you know, regardless of the lineup, I can't see how they can take it to them.
Okay, let's do our predictions for round six. I feel like I'm giving bad news to a parent or something.
I was trying to be right, positive.
Should we sit down
and play their own game?
Make yourself comfortable. Would you like a cup of tea? Cats versus Dockers. I'm going Dockers. And you can't stop me.
I'm going Cats.
Geelong.
Cats.
Collingwood versus Kangaroos. I'm going Collingwood.
Collingwood.
You really just don't like us, do you, Fee?
I'm going North because I think Collingwood would be feeling so deflated right now.
Morale be right. I think North, but not by as much as people think. Perhaps.
The double header in Melbourne, you're going to be there, Fee, managing the Masters Women's Showcase game.
Yes, I am going to be there.
Let's just mention that very briefly because Kiwi has sent a message to us. Yes, our southern correspondent has sent a telegram. So she said she's cheering for the oldies. Oh, she is one of them. Of course she's cheering for herself.
She's cheering for herself.
Cheering for the oldies running out onto Marvel Stadium on Saturday for a 3:30 p.m. start. And in the time-honoured fashion that I do so love the AFL for and experienced when I was at one of the exhibition games at Sydney Cricket Ground, the gates open at 3:30. That's right. Their match starts at 3:30 p.m. and the gates open at 3:30 p.m. So please be there and run very fast to your seats. I have done that before. It's doable. So it's over 40s. Kiwi reckons that's thanks to the fact that a 39-year-old C-bomb is still in the AFLW competition. So brief cheerio to you, C-bomb.
That's true.
And one team runner who is 69, and that's Lauren Arnell's mum.
Oh, sweet.
We call her Junior.
That's nice.
7 states will be represented, playing in Vic Country and Vic Metro colours, which may hurt some people a little bit. This includes record holder Belinda Blouse, who's now played over 350 games of footy. It's good a game for all ages. So yeah, be there and I'll be there looking very, very official. Very
good on you,
managerial. Back to our tips.
So the other game at Marvel Stadium, part of that doubleheader, is the Dogs and the Demons.
And I'm going D's. Try and stop me.
Yeah, the D's.
Demons, yeah.
Yeah, D's.
And then on the 10th of March, we'll be flipping on over to that's an interesting – yeah, anyway.
You will be flipping on over
to Adelaide to see the Giants play the Crows. And I am going for the Giants. I am going for them. I'm going down with them, but I'm going for them anyway.
Sorry, Adelaide. Easily.
Yeah, the Crows. Sorry, yeah. Fee.
The Crows. I'd love the Giants to give it a crack, yeah, but I've got a feeling that the Crows are too strong at this point.
We would just love to see them have a go. Don't you? Yeah, we just want to see something positive, someone really having a crack or something working and them not just going in expecting to be beaten like I expect them to.
They'll have a more positive frame of mind than you, Nat.
I can only take on Collingwood's Burtons. I can't take on GWS's as well.
Fair enough. Everyone has their cross. Carlton versus Brisbane. I'm going to go for Carlton.
This is the top of the Conference B ladder.
The top of the bottom?
No, not the top. So no, second and Carlton's third,
along
sorry.
Top of the, yep.
Second and third.
I think Brisbane, after last weekend, we'll have a good look at the tape and figure out what they did wrong and say we've got to do better than that.
Or can they play in the dark? Because it's going to be at Icon Park.
Oh, God. It's at 4:05 though. They've got daylight saving. It'll be light still. I reckon that's a really hard one to call.
Let's bear in mind that Collingwood almost beat Carlton.
Yeah, I'm going to go Lions.
One thing to say.
There's one thing left to say and that is
here come the Giants.
Come on, Giants. Please. You two-faced little whatnot.
Because
Brittany Lawrence is what she said.
Yeah.
Kick the winning score. Hear the mighty roar.
Okay.
The writer's behind you. It was in their eyes.
Apparently size does matter. Sorry, what was that?
Did you make it bigger this year after hearing that from Nat last week? I'll show her.
Especially made.
That's not a flag.
No, it's hilarious actually at the end of the night when we were picking up our gear from a little way away.
You needed a trailer to take it home.
For about 2.5 seconds, I thought, I can't see my bike. Where is it? And then I remember there was a big Tibetan flag on the back of it and it should be easy to spot.
I thought it's just to identify things in the car park.
That's right. Yeah.
Like they breath test you before you do the ride fee.
They sure do. Breath test
it. Oh, do they? Yep. They really do.
Every single rider. Yep.
There you go.
That's why I haven't been in Dykes on fire.
Can't be trusted. Okay.